The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for January 25th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. In agricultural news, we'll have more industry reaction to President Bush's call for 35 billion gallons of renewable fuels by 2017. Also, House Democrats are trying to revive mandatory country of origin labeling. We'll have details of these and other stories this half hour. Also, Todd Gleason will be by to give us the lowdown on carrying charges in the futures market. And meteorologist Peter Levitt will be by with agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City. March wheat, 494 up 7 and a quarter. May, 502 up 7 and a quarter. At the Chicago Board of Trade, March wheat, 468 and 3 quarters up 2 and 3 quarters. May, 481 and a quarter up 1 and a quarter. July, 490 and a half up 2 and a half. March corn, 407 up 6 and a quarter. May, 418 up 5 and a half. July, 424 up 5 and a half. December, 399 and a quarter up 1 and a half. March beans, 713 and a quarter down 1 and 3 quarters. May, 728 and a half down 2. July, 742 down 1 and a quarter. November, 765 and a half down 1 and a quarter. March soybean meal, 208.20 down 20. March soybean oil, 28.92 down 31. At the Merck, January feeders, 94.72 and a half up 2 and a half. February live cattle, 90.12 and a half up 27 and a half. February lean hog, 63.35 up 52 and a half on the day. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the futures market is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dan.
Good afternoon, Dave.
It was very much a choppy day of trade for much of the day, Dan. And then in the last 30 minutes or so, prices began to inch into positive territory and stay there. Why was the move upward today?
Well, corn kind of led the pack. I mean, you can see front-end corn up 6 and 5, and it pulled wheat up 2 to 1, and then it pulled beans off their lows. Even though beans did close lower, they were only down a penny or two. Technically, this $4 area has been tested a couple times here for support, and the market, any kind of selling pretty well dries up down at that area, long liquidation. I think we've had some unwinding of spreads because if you kind of watch the price action over the past week, the front months have been losing to the back-end months. Now today, that kind of reversed where the old crop months now gain back on these on the new crop months. So it kind of looks like the way the market acted today, maybe this end-of-the-month liquidation or profit-taking on the long side from the front end may have run its course here today a few days early. Now, we still have tomorrow, and we still have 3 days yet of January next week. But a lot of times the market goes opposite the dominant trend in the last part of the month, simply on profit taking, whether that's from the short side, the market would have a tendency to rally in the toward the end of the month. If it's been a dominant down month, and here it's been a dominant up month with the crop report sending prices sharply higher. Now, you know, we've had some long liquidation. So I think that at least kind of appears maybe that's kind of run its course here in corn, and now we're maybe now it's time for maybe the shorts to kind of come out.
And another week gone by without lead option corn futures pushing through that 415 to 417 area you've been talking about.
Well, that's okay, but we do need to probably begin to take a look, a solid challenge of that here next week. I mean, I think technically we've had some consolidation, kind of had a breather here after kind of the emotional trade there for a couple days after the crop report. We've been kind of walling around trading, trying to find a consolidation phase. So today's action indicates that maybe that might be done with, and now we're ready to begin to try to have a recovery rally back to test out those highs and see whether or not we can go through them or not. And that's going to be a nail-biter probably next week. But I'd like to see some follow-through action on this market here tomorrow. I'd like to see us go on and climb higher for the week and finish out the week higher. I think that would be a good sign that we will go ahead and maybe check out those highs for resistance next week. So that's kind of way it looks like to me. The beans are kind of in the same situation. The wheat market is, you know, the trend lines all point down on wheat. Whether or not corn's got enough momentum to kind of shift the trend in wheat, that'll be we'll have to watch for that to maybe develop here next week.
Volume relatively light today, and if you are keeping check of your charts side by side and your quotes side by side, you could see that it looks like the electronic was leading what was going on today to a large degree.
I think the electronic is the key indicator anymore. I think the pit trade is still there, but it's the volume. I think people feel that they get better feels going over on the electronic trade, and keeps the pit traders kind of in the dark. They don't necessarily know where all the buy orders or the sell orders are, where they used to do that when it was fully pit trading or auction market. So I kind of like the electronic trade. I think it's a little more honest, a little more clear cut. It kind of matches buyers and sellers, and it kind of gives you, I think, a better feel of the market.
So is that what you're keeping track of when you do your charts now, electronic trade? Because if you compare the electronic with the pit only, you do see differences in things like gaps, for example.
Well, I run both sets of charts, both full session charts and regular session charts. Sometimes one gives you a little better picture over the other, but, you know, they're not a whole lot of difference, but I do run both sets of charts.
Turn your attention to the soybeans. What are you seeing there?
Well, pretty much the same thing in corn. More is kind of a sideways type consolidation in here. Beans kind of dripped a little bit here by taking out the early week low here today, but we came back and only closed a couple pennies lower. Is pretty much of a, you know, the lead option here is pretty much of a 730 to 705 trading range. As long as we don't really penetrate that on the downside very much, I think that still keeps the market in play for another push to the upside. Sideways markets are not necessarily toppy-type markets. They're just kind of a consolidation phase before we go on to the next phase to the upside, and I think that's kind of where we're at probably in both commodities here.
I read somewhere that someone was calling this a bull pennant in the soybeans. Not sure
what
that means.
I mean, there's always somebody that comes up with something. I'm not necessarily sure I would call that a pennant, at least looking at it on a lead chart. Maybe if I take a look at the May chart, that might begin. I'm not necessarily sure I'd call that a pennant. I think it's more of a sideways congestion area. Now, it may have the same impact of a pennant. Now, if you start making new highs and start taking out those highs here that we had here a week ago or so, then that tees up, you know, a pretty good run on these beans. I mean, that would kind of trigger, you know, a 30 or 40 cent pop to the upside if we'd start making new highs, just as corn. If we would start making new highs in corn, that would at least suggest that we may have, there could be a 30 to 50 cent push up. We'll have to kind of take one day at a time. There is, you know, when you're messing around at these levels, you can always find a resistance point. We'll have to see how the market trades those, but I got 429 could be a hard spot. We'll have to kind of see how that handles if we go on up through this 20 area.
Thank you much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Taking a look at Mike Sola's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. In northeastern Indiana, cloudy with isolated snow squalls. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows ranging from 9 degrees in northeastern Indiana to 23 degrees in southwestern Illinois. And then tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, with highs ranging from 28 degrees in northeastern Indiana to 48 degrees in southwestern Illinois. In agricultural news, renewable fuel industry officials say corn and soybeans alone cannot achieve the president's call for 35 billion gallons of alternative fuels by 2017. Brian Jennings, executive director of the American Coalition for Ethanol, says President Bush's State of the Union address set the right tone and noted it will take, in his words, a lot of ingredients to help accomplish that goal.
We now need some political willpower on the part of the president and Congress to get it done. We also need to understand this is a gradual thing. It won't happen overnight, and we need to address concerns that might arise about infrastructure and other unintended consequences of increasing ethanol production and use this much.
National Farmers Union President Tom Bias says a higher RFS will help farmers.
Encouraging the use of renewable fuels will increase domestic demand for surplus farm commodities, lower federal outlays of federal farm subsidies, improve the environment, and decrease our reliance on foreign oil. It will also create vital economic opportunities in rural communities across our nation.
Bob Dineen is president of the Renewable Fuels Association. Dineen says the president's goal is achievable, but will take cellulosic production as well as increased efficiencies in grain ethanol. Pam Johnson is chair of the National Corn Growers Association Research and Development Action Team. Johnson says scientists have much to do.
I think research just overnight became a priority because we're going to need research and policy and infrastructure all to move forward at the same time so we can really capitalize on what we can do.
Meanwhile, Senate Ag Chairman Tom Harkin says he and the president are on the same page when it comes to ethanol.
Well, I was very encouraged by what the president had to say, and in fact, I was one of the first on my feet applauding. This is one place where we can work across the aisle in a bipartisan manner to really do things that are good for our national security, raise the income of people who live in rural America, and clean up our air and water. So it's a win-win for everyone.
Brazilian ethanol traders say they could benefit from a U.S. push to increase ethanol consumption. They say high Brazilian ethanol production could put a dent in U.S. production, especially if costs remain lower for Brazilian producers. In 2006, the U.S. purchased about 2 billion liters of ethanol from Brazil. Less than 24 hours after the president's address, USDA Secretary Mike Johanns announced the first detail of the administration's 2007 Farm Bill proposal.
We will be proposing $1.6 billion and new funding for renewable energy, with a focus on cellulosic energy research and production as part of the administration's 2007 Farm Bill proposals. This is going to support the president's goal of reducing gasoline usage by 20% in 10 years. We've had great success with corn-based ethanol. Now we have our sights set higher because of the president's leadership. And so today I can indicate that I believe we're going to have a very exciting energy title in our Farm Bill proposals.
Joe Hans says the USDA will finish its Farm Bill 2007 proposal in a matter of days.
We want to make sure that everything works and everything balances, but we're not very far off. I've said all along that sometime in the next couple of weeks, we should be in a position to get an announcement out there and talk very specifically about what we're proposing for the next Farm Bill.
USDA Secretary Mike Johanns. Key House Democrats say they support mandatory country of origin labeling, despite opposition from the Bush administration. House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson says he wants a labeling law enacted late this year or in 2008. But Peterson says the rule, originally written in 2003, needs updating. The law was part of the current Farm Bill and was slated to begin in 2004, but opponents have delayed implementation. RCAF USA officials applauded the news and say they will urge Congress to target a startup date of September 30th. The nation's first methane-powered corn ethanol plant will begin operations next month. The Meade, Nebraska facility will use a methanol closed-loop system, collecting manure from cows on-site and turning it into methanol to power the plant. Cattle at the ethanol facility will eat a byproduct of ethanol production, wet distiller's grain. The Meade, Nebraska ethanol facility is right next to a 28,000-head cattle feedlot. The plant will produce 25 million gallons of ethanol annually. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Sometimes the experts say the markets are telling farmers to store corn. How do they know? Apparently, the decision is founded in a mathematical equation called the carrying charge. Todd Gleason reports.
In the world of commodity marketing, carry is a word used synonymously with the term spread. In this case, both describe the relationship of the deferred futures to the nearby futures. Futures is the name used to trade commodities like corn and soybeans, gold, or coffee in the future. For instance, corn is traded in several future months of the year. Contracts are available for December, January, March, May, July, and September of this year and next. The carry describes the price difference between two contracts, usually the current month, and something well into the future. At harvest time, the current month is September. A deferred contract is one from December, January, March, May, or July. The carry is the difference in the price buyers are willing to pay for the corn delivered in those 2 months. University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good says corn producers can use the carrying charge to determine if it is most likely to be better to sell their crop as it is harvested or to pay the cost to store it until a later date. Typically, deferred futures are higher in price than nearbys because they reflect the storage costs.
Now, the carry or the spreads will never exceed the cost of storage at the delivery market, but those spreads can be smaller than full carry, smaller than the cost of storage, or they actually can be inverted. That is, deferred futures can be lower price than nearby futures. It's the magnitude of that spread or carry that is really the signal to market participants whether they should be storing the crop or selling it on the spot market.
If the carry is large, the spread between the price of the nearby futures and the deferred months is 25, 35, 45, 50 cents in favor of the deferred month, Good says that's a clear signal to store the crop for later sale. If the market is inverted, that is, today's price is greater than that in the future, then the crop should be sold today. And that sounds easy enough. Today's price is less than the futures price plus what it will cost to store the crop. Then don't sell. If today's price is greater than the price in the future months, sell. But then the farmer has to figure in his basis. Basis is the difference between what the local elevator will pay a producer for his crop and the price in Chicago. The basis can either be weak or strong. A weak basis means the difference in the Chicago price and the local bid is wide. Usually the local bid is less than the Chicago bid and stays fairly constant depending on the locality. In central Illinois, the bids are generally 8 to 10 cents below the Chicago bid. When the basis is weak, wider than usual, it means the local elevators don't want to buy and store the corn from the farmer. A weak basis is also a sign that producers should find a way to store corn on the farm.
So we look at what the market is offering, then second, calculate what it would cost you to hold corn from harvest time until May of next year. If that's on farm, the biggest cost is interest on the value of the crop, plus some handling in and out of the storage bin. If it's commercially, then you need to add the commercial storage charges to see if the total cost is more or less than the carry that the market is offering.
The carrying charge, then, again, signals whether or not a commodity, like corn, should be stored by the producer for sale at a later date. A large carrying charge suggests the crop should be stored. An inverted charge, when the price today is greater than the price in the future, suggests the crop should be sold. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic Farm Marketing is now holding a series of risk management seminars throughout Illinois and Indiana. Information on seminar dates and locations is available at sfarmmarketing.com or 800-383-0046.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon, Dave.
The question I have for you is, why do you think that basis is weaker than is typical at this time of the year?
Well, I think that's a great question, and it really just boils down to a couple of simple things. We got prices at pretty high levels, just flat price-wise, and, you know, we're in that period where farmers go through a lot of cash here, and I think that you just see the corn's pretty easy to buy. You know, if I need to get some corn sold to get some cash flow, and we're sitting here at, you know, 375 or so on the board, or, you know, on the bid price, I guess I'm not going to hesitate too much to go ahead and sell that, where if I'm, you know, like a year or two ago, if you're down there at 210, you might try to get that extra 5 cents out of the market or something. So I think it's just easier to get the corn to move. Soybeans kind of in the same boat, although they're not quite as high historically.
Would you expect that basis would firm over the next 30 to 60 degrees, and if so, why?
30 to 60 days?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat, because you're going to have some road posting. That always kind of halts the movement off the farm. But I think it'll improve some, but I don't think he's going to see a big movement, because I think there's enough hedge corn out here. That's the other part of the equation, the corn that the elevators own. We're still in a situation, it seems like to me, from the people I talk to, that the elevators are pretty full, and as they need to make room, they're pretty easy to move that corn with a slight improvement in basis. So I think you'll see it improve as you get, you know, against the next futures month, the delivery month like the March, but I don't know that you're going to see it come into any fantastic levels.
Your prices today?
We're at 379 for old corn, 367 new, 675 on the beans.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Dave.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. And in about 2 minutes, Peter Levitt will join us with a look at today's agricultural weather.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. University of Illinois police say on-campus crime was down in the fall semester. The Division of Public Safety on the Urbana-Champaign campus reports that crime decreased significantly in all areas, particularly robbery. 17 robberies were reported last fall, a 47% drop from the fall of 2005. A passport fair is winding down this hour at Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana. The U.S. Postal Service held the fair for people seeking passports, and more than 200 people attended in the morning. Many said they came because of new regulations requiring passports when traveling by air to Canada and Mexico. A federal judge has sentenced one of three janitors involved in a scheme to pocket nearly $200,000 in state pay for work they didn't do. David Medvesic of Springfield was sentenced today in Peoria to 5 months in prison and 6 months of home confinement. The 58-year-old Medvesic also was ordered to pay more than $51,000 in restitution and fines. Medvesic told Judge Joe B. McDade, or rather he asked Judge Joe B. McDade for forgiveness, and took responsibility for the crime. A judge in Indiana has entered a not guilty plea on behalf of a Chicago man accused of abducting his ex-girlfriend and their four children. 32-year-old Jerry White was in court in Elkhart, Indiana today. He told the judge that he plans to hire his own attorney. A judge has decided to move the trial of a truck driver accused of causing a highway crash that killed a Taylor University employee and four students out of Grant County, Indiana. The case gained national attention when one of the victims was misidentified for weeks. The new site of the trial has not been determined. Al Capone, possibly the world's most infamous gangster, died 60 years ago today. Chicago History Museum curator John Russick says Capone gets more hits than any other person on the museum's website. Capone, also known as Scarface, ran Chicago's massive bootlegging, prostitution, and gambling operation during Prohibition. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Peter Levitt. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's start in the Midwest, where I guess, by all accounts, it's going to get rather cold. But where and when has been, at least in the last few days, still up for debate?
Yeah, well, the next couple of days actually are going to see temperatures above normal Friday and Saturday in Illinois. The first thrust of cold air has really descended into the Northeast, and we'll feel it here in New England. But over in the central portion of the Midwest, temperatures will be back toward normal levels. We may even see 40 degrees tomorrow and in the 25 min to 34 max range on Saturday. Then the cold air arrives, preceded perhaps by a few light snow showers, but we're not looking for any storms, just colder weather. The cold weather will move in Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. All days will be below normal with high temperatures, mostly in the low 20s, and low temperatures anywhere from 8 to 12 degrees across most of the listening area. And that isn't all, because it looks like the real cold weather is on tap for the end of the month and the first few days of February.
And then we have lows in the single digits?
Yeah, I think we'll see some, perhaps even some sub-zero readings here and there with a massive outbreak of cold air coming down from the central Canada, Hudson Bay region, right down into the upper Midwest and lower Midwest during the last few days of January.
We don't normally talk about citrus, but given all the problems they've had in California this month, will that cold snap later in the early part of February have any impact on Florida?
That's a very good question. It looks like there'll be a series of cold shots coming down, each one working a little bit further to the south. And I would say, after saying all season long there was no chance of frost or freeze in Florida, I think now we can talk about a chance of it, probably in the first week of February, but we'll have to handle that next week because the California devastation of the table fruit portion of the citrus crop was really quite severe, about 75% loss. In Florida, they do mostly concentrated juice or squeezed juice, processed juice, and so that's actually a different market.
Then let's turn your attention to South America and ask whether or not Brazil is beginning to trend too wet in parts of the nation.
You've got it. It's too wet in Brazil. They had another wet week. Most of the heaviest rain has been in the northern half of southern Brazil, which is really up in coffee and, again, citrus country and some soybean countries. And they're concerned now about diseases in the southern states. The moisture has been frequent but mostly adequate to a little above normal and probably beneficial for soybeans. Of course, the big problem is moist temperatures and relatively cool temperatures promote problems of rust, and that's a major problem down there. That's a possibility.
Thanks, Peter.
My pleasure.
Agricultural meteorologist Peter Levitt. And that is today's closing market report. Don't forget to tune in on Saturday morning at 11:30 a.m. Central Time for Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey.